It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 407 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's yet another great doubleheader week here at the podcast. And everything kicks off with Trey Walker from a wonderful book called Last Stop. It was on webcomics.com and now it's coming to Scout Comics. People always say that we've done everything possible with superheroes, but this book shows that that's not true. It's a very gripping story of a superhero coming to the end of his existence, and certain complications rise up, so he has to deal with them as well as his own personal problems. Then I talked to Martin Piero from Cosmic Times, who has a great book on Kickstarter right now called From Blood. It's an action-adventure story with all kinds of great character moments. It's one of those fast-moving books that I really like because I prefer that to long dialogue boxes. So it's one of those great books that is going to keep you on the edge of your chair. We talk about how the book came to be, as well as what the future might hold for From Blood, as well as Cosmic Times. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Trey Walker, the writer behind a wonderful book called Last Stop, which is coming out from Scout Comics very soon. How you doing, Trey?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good. You made it possible for me to read the book, which I have to say, I really appreciate that I got to read the whole thing because it was a page turner. I was literally going, oh, no, I just couldn't stop turning the pages till I got to the very end. It's a really gripping story. I really loved the book. It's really well done. Do you want to talk a little bit about the history, how this book came to be?
Sure. I suppose it was a couple years ago. Hoyt and I, and Hoyt Silva is the artist for Last Stop, and we co-created this thing together. So, you know, it's definitely like a labor of love from the both of us. Mm-hmm. But yeah, me and him have been wanting to do stuff together. Me and him know each other from like way back when we were groomsmen in each other's weddings and all that stuff. And since like 2012, we've just kind of been tossing stuff back and forth. That's kind of when I decided that I wanted to write. And so it's just a lot of trial and error, kind of tossing ideas back and forth. And we've been looking at web comics for a while and thought, you know, maybe that might be an interesting path, kind of experiment a little bit with stuff. So initially we kind of set out to do it as a web comic. Mm-hmm. And we tried to do it on our own website, and it's just hard to drive traffic to a dedicated site like that. Mm-hmm. Like 2 years ago, we kind of made the move over to Webtoons. We just kind of like started over whole cloth, just started telling the story from scratch again. Mm-hmm. And kind of ran that for a year. So we ran the entire story. And after that, we decided that we would run a Kickstarter for it. Mm-hmm. And successfully funded that earlier this year, and then got picked up. So it's been an interesting, fun ride. And in the public eye, I suppose it's been about 2 years though since Last Stop's kind of been making the rounds.
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting to me because these days, superhero books are kind of considered out of the realm of indie books and stuff like this, because DC and Marvel are the ones that basically always have the superhero stuff going on, so
right.
Other companies sort of shy away from them, and yet this is a superhero, and it's Scout Comics. This may be the very first superhero book they've ever done.
I'm not super familiar with their entire catalog because they've got a bunch of great stuff, but I think we might actually be the first like superhero-y kind of story that they've picked up.
Well, it's just an amazing story. Let me read the description real quickly. There's a description paragraph that I think is really helps people understand what the story is about. It says, "Time is ticking for the world's last superhero. Lincoln Adams, a.k.a. Unstoppable, must make peace with the changing world around him. Can there truly be a place for him in a world without supers? After learning he has a terminal disease, Lincoln sees an easy way out. However, the reemergence of an old arch nemesis, and a new shadowy masked figure turn Lincoln's plans of an easy passing on their head. Can Lincoln stop this new threat before the disease stops him?" Now, see, that's where I think this is much different from what I'm used to seeing. We're not, you know, superhero comics go on forever.
Right.
You know, there's no end. But they do it sometimes, and then it's just sort of, well, yeah, that was just an imaginary story kind of stuff. But this one, you're really talking with somebody with a terminal disease who has to face what may be, you know, it's called Last Stop for a reason. This may be his last thing. Where did that come from? I mean, I'm just fascinated where the idea of dealing with the end of a superhero's existence came from.
Right. when Hoyt and I work together, we take turns just kind of like spitballing, you know, this is what we're going to do here, like whatever. This was actually the origins of this story actually came from Hoyt, where he was just like, this is a kind of a story that I would love to tell. And it was like it was his vision of like what if his little what if scenario of Captain America. You know, like the later in Captain America's life, you know, it's an altered superhero, potentially living longer than the average person. What would he, as the world changed around him, what would he ultimately be, you know, facing, especially when confronted with, you know, now it's finally time to pass away. Like, you know, you have this brain cancer, you know, there's no coming back from it. Kind of maybe even being a little disillusioned about it, or being, you know, just the state of the world and all that stuff. And just, what does a hero do when confronted with, you know, not going out in a big bang, but, you know, experiencing life like a normal person and having to confront old age?
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Batman lives forever.
Right. I think he's like perpetually 28.
Yeah. And you always have to write the story so that another person can pick it up and write the same kind of story next time. But yours is not like that. Yours is very much of a, oh gosh, what was the way to say it? This is a end of life kind of thing. You know, people are always interested in origin stories, but this is really is titled well, The Last Stop for this character.
Right.
I also have to talk about how I love the logo of it. It looks like a stop sign.
Right. I mean, that's some of Hoyt's genius design work there. kind of leaned into some of the iconography a little bit, but it came out really well.
It's really cool. Now, the way this comes out from Scout Comics, they have what they call a nonstop thing. It's going to be the first issue is going to come out, and then a couple months later, you're going to get the entire story, the trade, will come out with it. Now, we were talking a little bit before we started to record that it's the end of this month when the first one comes out?
Correct, yes.
Do you know?
I believe it's supposed to be the 27th.
Okay.
I think that's the release, you know, that's when it'll be in comic shops.
Okay. What about the trade? Have you guys – have they told you when the trade's going to come out?
Yes. We don't know the exact date for that yet, but the solicitations for that will go out actually this month. So it'll be sometime in February is when the trade will come out.
Okay. That'll be great. That'll be good stuff. Now, I've got to ask something really important because Lincoln Adams is a person of color, which, you know, I'm always interested when I see people of color – that are new creations, new characters. I don't like it when they put Miles Morales in the Spider-Man outfit, for example. I like to see a new one. I mean, to see this brand new creation you've made called Unstoppable, and to see the character and his reaction to things. He doesn't necessarily react to things the way I'm used to, like Superman or somebody else reacting to it.
Right.
So talk about that. I mean, talk about how that was as far as the character and what the diversity meant for him.
We kind of went into it. Like, I mean, I'm not a person of color or anything like that. And it was just one of those I was kind of hands off in the design aspect. I mean, obviously, like, we were passing stuff back and forth, and Hoyt just sent over the say. I don't know. It was just like a question. It wasn't even a question. He sent over character designs, and I was like, "That looks fantastic. Like, you know, we're gonna do that." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "It wasn't like. I mean, obviously, I don't. My point of view, I can't." I wouldn't try to force anything on like anybody or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And it was like important for me as a writer just to write him like I would write, you know, anybody else. Mm-hmm. And you know, we don't really deal with like the race or anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not like an aspect of the story that's like being told or anything like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So it really didn't change anything. It was just mm-hmm. kind of one of those, you know, why not, you know, okay, the same thing as you, like mm-hmm. you see these characters and it's just like we're just slapping an old costume on a different person, and mm-hmm. that's supposed to, like, you know, yay, diversity kind of thing. But, like, you know, there really does need to be more, you know, original content, original heroes of, you know, all, you know, races and creeds and all of that good stuff.
But, see, to me, it made him more relatable. You know, the fact that he was a superhero, been around for a long time, and now that he was facing the end, and I felt for the way that he dealt with stuff. There's a very unique way that he deals with bad news.
Right. That was more of a, like, you know, we kind of set it up, you know, that this is a man that's been around for a very long time. Mm-hmm. We don't have to actually ever say his age in the story. Mm-hmm. That's just one of those little, like, we wrote it and it's in our, you know, notes, and you know, we were kind of functioning under that. But this dude's been around for a very, very long time, and just, you know, the world changes. We hint at this big world war that happened, and, you know, now he's the only surviving superhero. And, you know, what does that do to a person? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kind of hint at the way that the world kind of views superheroes now, which, you know, not that great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that disillusionment of, like, you had this really important job and now nobody really wants you to do that job, but that's the only thing you know how to do. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so that kind of how he – when he gets the news, which happens very, very – I mean, that's like one of the first, I think, happens within the first 10 pages. We go ahead and, you know, like, it's in the book description. You know what's coming. Mm-hmm. When he does get that news, it's more of like a relief. Mm-hmm. Like it's more like, okay, I can finally rest. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like he's a superhero and superheroes don't, you know, he's not ever going to like give up directly, but now he's been given that kind of like free pass of like, okay, here you go. It's time to finally, you know, mm-hmm. rest.
Yeah, it's something because, you know, he's done this for so long probably, you know, because like my job where I work, I go in and work, I've done this thing for years now. And you know, I do desktop publishing. I lay out newsletters and papers mm-hmm. and stuff. And so, you know, I've done this for like years and years and years. And, you know, everybody's like, oh, boy, you get to do another one. I'm like, yeah, I get to do another one. and so I see that in him. That, you know, he's been doing this for so long that maybe he's going to be kind of able to take a rest and stop from doing
right.
this.
Right. Well, there's a certain level of cynicism that would come with that too. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you've been doing it for so long and it is kind of like, oh, yay, like here we go again mm-hmm. kind of a thought. Mm-hmm.
But he's such an interesting character. That's one of the things. I don't know if it would have made a difference if he was a white character versus a person of color. I don't know if that would have made a difference in him, but to me it made him more, like I said, relatable, more interesting. You know, here's a character, because we're kind of used to superheroes reacting a certain way. He doesn't do that, and that to me made him really somebody of interest to me. I kept following him when he keeps running into different circumstances. He reacts differently than I expected, and I thought that was really a cool thing for the character.
Well, thank you.
we should talk about his appearance, too, because, you know, not only is he a person of color, but he's got, in his hair, he's got, not this may be Hoyt's thing rather than yours, but he's got a little skull.
Right. That's more of a – yeah, that's definitely like a Hoyt Hoyt blew the design out of the way, like out of the water for like all of the characters and everything like that. But yeah, that's like one of those little motifs of like when he's out of his uniform. Like his uniform is very like skull-centric, I guess. Mm-hmm. His mask is very skull-like. He's got little skull shoulder pads on and everything like that. Looks very menacing. But then to carry that motif into like when he's out of his uniform was just kind of a – you know, it was like a little white patch in his hair, and, you know, it happened to be in the shape of a skull.
So he's the hero even when he's not in costume.
Right.
That's what's going on with that. So I really enjoyed his character. You know, it's funny, you know, knowing what the setup is, I got to the place, and as I was reading it, where I thought, I hope he doesn't die.
Right.
You know, I got to the place where all these things are going on around him, and certain things develop, and I don't want to spoil anything because there's a really fascinating development, particularly in the second part, mm-hmm. that I don't want to touch on because it's something it's better if you're surprised by it like I was.
Right.
So I don't want to give that up. But let's just say he deals with things, you know, he doesn't want to do certain things. He's kind of realized this is coming to an end, so he doesn't necessarily want to take on any new challenges, shall we say.
Right.
And he's presented with a challenge, and they actually order him to do this thing that presents itself to him, and he is very much against it at first. And, you know, I feel for him, too. You know, you're kind of coming down to the end of your life, and all of a sudden they want you to do something brand new. I mean, you know, you're kind of like, let me stick to what's familiar to me at this point.
It's taking on a task that will weigh, like, it will continue beyond his, you know, coming end. And, you know, again, that's something confront, like, how would you handle receiving a task that you knew is much bigger than you and would continue to need to live on much after you were gone, and yet you are now responsible for that thing? Like, you know, that task is now solely in your hands. Like, how do you, what would you do?
Mm-hmm. That ties into the bad guy of the story. How do you pronounce his last name? It's spelled B-L-A-C-H. Is it Block?
Yeah, it's Block. Yeah. Block.
Okay, so I want to be sure. This is one of the things I always wish there were pronunciation guides in some comics.
Right, we probably should put one.
I'm never sure exactly what it is.
Right.
But it's Professor Block, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the bad guy, and he's out of circulation for a while, and suddenly he shows up again. And all this stuff that we're dancing around is something that he's been up to for a while.
Right.
And that's important to see. Talk about the creation of the bad guy, because, you know, it's interesting to see a bad guy who disappears for a while, because normally they are there, and they're very – you know, it's endless. You know, Lex Luthor is endlessly around bothering Superman.
Right, exactly, yeah.
This guy vanishes for several years, and we find out why in the story. Mm-hmm. But talk about that, because that's, you know, there again, there's something very different for a superhero story. One of the things I really loved about that was that you were kept doing things that were new as far as, like, superhero things go, and this was one of the things I was really interested in. So how did that come about? I mean, the creation of the character, and, you know, the fact that he drops out of sight for a while, that's very unusual.
The origin of his name is more of just, it's a kind of a, you know, goofy little play on, you know, what happens when an unstoppable force, and in our case, a literal unstoppable force, is our hero meets, you know, an immovable object, and in that case, like a brick wall, a block.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that's just for the naming convention. That was just a goofy, you know, comic book thing that we did.
Mm-hmm.
But no, like, so going back to your point about Superman and Lex Luthor, what would happen with Superman if Lex Luthor just disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not just disappeared, but, like, presumed dead. Like, at this point, everyone just assumed that, you know, this villain has been dead for years. And, like, what is that? Like, going back to for the villains that are always around and everything like that,
mm-hmm.
That kind of just, like, shows the level of dedication,
mm-hmm.
you know, that he managed to, like, hide himself away and, like, work on this big, like, thing for so long and not reveal himself or not, you know, like, his master plan was literally sitting on it for years. And just like being the willingness to lie low that long just to try to get one over on Lincoln is, you know, that kind of going back to the, you know, this literally is his, like, Lex Luthor.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm. And quite the nasty. And the reason why he's disappeared is a very nasty reason, shall we say. And let's just say that Lincoln isn't very pleased when he finds out what's really going on with all that. So it's a very, very gripping story. I couldn't you know, I couldn't wait to turn the page to see now what's going to happen next. There's another element we should talk about, and that's the group that Lincoln is a part of called Fist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it just seems like superheroes are attracted to other people in groups and stuff. Talk about Fist and who they are and how Lincoln's a part of them.
Okay, so it's kind of like our little, you know, if this is like its little like micro universe of a story, this is this world's version of like S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's they're the, you know, it's led by like an old super spy. So we've got like a Nick Fury kind of counterpart in there. And, you know, it's just like a team of, you know, set apart from the government. They're not the government per se, but they're kind of there policing, you know, the super world, I suppose you could say. Mm-hmm. And again, there's not much super going on at this point in time. So they're kind of like relegated to just, you know, more mundane kind of tasks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like Lincoln is their like trump card, basically. He's mm-hmm. their, you know, ace in the hole. The, you know, the superhero core to that team is kind of like founded around him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's really different. It's in a way that kind of, I'm sure by now, if he's been doing this for a long time with Fist, that, you know, he's always the muscle that comes in at the last minute to try to mop up things, seems like.
Right.
You know, they go in first, or it seems like there's two strategies. Sometimes he goes in first, and sometimes they go in first, and he comes in to mop up with that. Is that how Fist does things, it seems like?
Well, again, like the kind of opening bit to the story is Lincoln kind of going rogue a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, while he does come crashing in like a wrecking ball, you know, that it is like when your power is like of basically like in invulnerability and super strength, you don't really finesse things too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so like obviously he catches a little bit of flack for that. And mm-hmm. He's definitely the wrecking ball, and in a lot of cases, while it's not necessarily supposed to be that way, he's the wrecking ball, and then Fist is kind of the cleanup crew that comes in after him to kind of smooth things over a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Doctor is an interesting character, and it's the guy that knows what's going on with Lincoln, and yet Lincoln wants him to kind of keep it under wraps for that for a while, and you know, he knows eventually it's all going to come out, but you know, Lincoln, of course, is a typical male thing. You don't want anybody feeling sorry for you, so you just keep going. And, you know, again, that makes me feel sympathy for him, because that is what I've known so many people that have had terrible things going on in their lives, but they won't tell anybody until it's, right, like, too late. And so I related to Lincoln in that way, because here he is doing that, and he's got this doctor, and he keeps telling the doctor, don't tell anybody.
Right.
And yeah, I'm just fascinated by that. And there's a point at which he believes the jig is up, and he reacts rather unhappily,
right?
Which I liked. So it's just a. See, the characters live and breathe in this book for me. You know, it's almost like real people in unreal circumstances, and we get to see how they change as things around them change. So I really like that about it—the very human way that they are.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's very kind of you.
Because there's several people around him, of course, in Fist, and we get to know them as they go along, and there are surprises along the way. One of the things I really want to point out is that it seems like almost every part, there's several parts to it, there's a big surprise that floored me when I got to it, and I was just like, whoa. And of course, I you get an idea where you think stories are going to go, and I had a certain idea, and I just had no idea from part to part where it was going to go. After the first one, I was literally got to the second one, and I don't know what's going to happen next, which is something I treasure in especially in a superhero type comic. I want to know, I've read them so long now, I kind of feel like I know what's going to happen next. But your book just threw me. Every time I started to think, okay, now I get it, I get thrown off the horse again, and I'd have to sit there and think, okay, now what's going to happen? So there's all these wonderful things. I want to make sure that people understand that this is a very, you know, if you think because there's superheroes involved, you're going to know what's going to happen, I can guarantee you, you're not going to know. You're not going to know, because they're little curves and twists keep coming along and throwing everybody off pace. And that's one of the things I loved about this book, because I literally didn't know what you were going to do next. Like I said, there was a time, well, I thought it was going to go a certain way, and it didn't. Let's just say, I just, I've already mentioned it once, and I don't want to keep mentioning it, but I literally, you get to feel for the characters, you get to want the best for them, and it doesn't always go that way. But that, you know what, that makes it a good story.
Right.
It makes us understand and care about, Lincoln and the characters around him, because we don't know what's going to happen. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I got to say, the end is particularly great. Let's just say that that Lincoln's tradition has not gone away there in the end.
Right. It gets preserved in a way.
Yeah, which I really liked when I got there. Certain things I wanted to have happen, they didn't happen, but it still ended up on a really great note, I thought. You set the stuff up for us, and then when we get to the end, our feelings are involved, and it makes it a real touching story, because superhero stories aren't often touching, I've come to feel. That a lot of the times we'll come to something and it's interesting, but I don't get an emotional reaction. But yours, I got an emotional reaction to. Just a well-done story that, of course, now I got to ask, this was called Last Stop.
Mm-hmm.
I always get a kick for Final Countdown, and then it's another Final Countdown.
Right, kind of stuff.
So do you have other stories in the Last Stop universe you're thinking about doing?
Not right now. Okay. When we going back to just the conception of it, the conception of Last Stop was the ending. Okay. So we started with a concrete ending that we knew we wanted, and that was kind of the driving force, especially for me writing, was going back far enough to tell a coherent enough story, but finding out where you're going to start it, knowing where you're going to end it.
Mm. But you see how different that is, though? Superhero stories don't do that. Like we were saying, Batman goes on endlessly. There's no end. It's like X-Men. You have to know 30 years of continuity in order to pick up a book and know what's going on with it. But with your book, yours is a contained story. And that's part of the enjoyment of it, is to know where that when we get someplace, it has a really concrete conclusion that's really enjoyable and something to read. I, like I said, I was touched by it. I was really, I don't get that in superhero comics. I'm kind of like, okay, well, now what? But this one, I literally sat there and was like, gosh, that was a really touching superhero story. I really have to treasure that. Because I don't run into that very often. So I have to congratulate you guys for doing a story that really reaches out and grabs you and won't let you go. And when we get to the end, it's just amazing. It's just a great, great end.
Thank you.
Now, I've got to talk about Hoyt's art a little bit with you, because his artwork, and I've seen Hoyt many times at conventions and stuff. I think I saw him in New York one time, and I've talked with him a couple times, but I've never gotten him on the podcast yet. This may have to spur me to do it more. His ability to use – now, he's doing the coloring as well as the drawing, right?
Correct, yes.
Because his use of color is somewhat different, He uses different colors depending on what's going on in the frame. You'll have bright greens, and all of a sudden it'll turn to a lime green.
Right.
And stuff goes on. And probably he's the one best to answer that. But what was your reaction when you started to see how the art was going to
We knew that we weren't doing this traditionally. So, you can kind of throw caution to the wind a little bit. And, when we first started it too, it was we'll get to the selling of it later. Right now, we just want to tell a story, and we're going to try to tell it in a way that, is a little bit different. So, we're both trying to experiment back and forth and everything. And so he was trying to lock down just stylistically how he would handle writing for – or drawing for a webcomic versus, traditional, format. And that was kind of when we got to the color part of it. He just the style that he chose to do was more of just an experimental. There's three colors on the page at any given time. And you've got black, white, which is your negative space, and then a color. But the color throughout the page, he picks a color and then just shifts that same color in either hue or temperature into a different color. Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily based on mood or anything like that. Like, you know, like action things are always red or anything like that. But there is like I feel like it's more of like, you know, cool to warm based on the mood, I guess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, I guess is a little bit reminiscent of like a mood ring, I guess, mm-hmm. of like, you know, depending on the mood of the scene or whatever, that's how the temperature is going to change in the color a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a very unique style. Mm-hmm. I think it's very eye catching and it kind of pulls you in. Mm-hmm. And it works well on both a digital format and on paper.
Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, eye popping. When I look at it, like sometimes the word balloons are even reversed out. They'll have the color will be the background, and the text will be white.
Right, and that's actually I should say Micah Myers did our lettering, so that was his little bit of coming in and mirroring and matching what Hoyt was doing in the color, and either reversing out the balloons or making the text that color. I know sometimes we got a little light; the color was a little too light to let the text be that color as well, so we had to revert back to black ink for that. But the design and how Micah ended up like marrying that design choice from Hoyt for the color worked out really, really well.
Mm-hmm. It's just eye popping to me. And of course, now when I look at it, I think, gosh, this would make a really interesting animated movie of some sort. I could see this on a screen, and the colors altering a little bit. I mean, do you guys see that way? I mean, is this something that could that you guys would want to see translated into an animated short or a film or something?
I mean, I wouldn't be mad at that. I think that would be, and this kind of goes and ties into the finality of it, mm-hmm. and not doing a more, I personally am a little hesitant of doing like a serialized thing that just keeps going on and on and on. And of mm-hmm. course you build arcs into that and you're trying to tell, little stories, that begin and complete, but then you immediately, the very next episode, the next issue, you have to pick back up and, immediately jump into the next thing. I've always been a little, I'm not saying that I never would, but I enjoy things that are more, like graphic novel. Ours is technically, I guess you could say, like a double length graphic novel. It's like 150 something pages, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I'm more interested in that mm-hmm. size, because you get to tell something that's a little bit more, I guess, it's a little bit more palatable to me. And, I guess both as a consumer and a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm interested too, though. You divided it up into several parts.
Yes.
Did you have in mind like a comic setup for that, or how was that? Why did you divide
it into parts? We did. We were kind of functioning under like normal, comic convention. Mm-hmm. So we had set it up as if we did this and let's say we ran it as a webcomic and then got picked up by a publisher. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure we've kind of got it designed and in a palatable enough like way that you could easily transition it to a four-part miniseries or something mm-hmm. like that, a little short. And then collect it in a trade or something like that. So yeah, the parts are technically what each like just a standard comic book would be. Mm-hmm. That's how it started anyway. By the time we got to I think three, it was a little I think they kept getting longer the more we kept going with it. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. That was just kind of finally letting go of that convention.
It's just a pleasure to read. I'm so glad I got to read the whole thing at once. I would just be, if I'd only read the first one, I'd be sitting here just, going, now what?
Well, that makes me feel good because that means that like we have a nice, I feel like we got a great stopping point for where the first issue is going to end. That will hopefully galvanize people to pick up the trade when that comes out and you can finally get the whole story all at once.
Because this is nonstop is a perfect way to describe this story. It just doesn't stop. I mean, I just had to keep turning and keep turning and keep turning, and it's just such a great thing. Now, of course, I got to ask, Kickstarter. Why did you go to Kickstarter? Were you paying for the printing? Was that what Kickstarter was about?
Yes, basically, because at that point we had the complete story. Mm-hmm. So it was more of just a way of like we want to see this thing printed. We had a pretty decent follow, you know, we releasing it through Webtoon and everything like that. We found a pretty, I mean, pretty modest, good size audience for it. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, you know, galvanized us to go ahead and just say, you know, we can start shopping this around to publishers and see if they want to, you know, pick this up or anything like that. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and let's just get a printed copy of this out there. Because me and him were both super excited about the story. We're both very proud of it. And I wanted to hold that tangible artifact in my hand. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the Kickstarter was literally just to get printed. And if we went, you know, above and beyond the printing cost, it would just kind of like retroactively kind of pay us for 2 years of our time, like, you know, telling the story.
Mm-hmm. And now, yeah. So how did you get in Scout then? Did you print out a couple copies and then give them to different companies, or did Scout approach you? How did that happen?
After we finished the Kickstarter is when we like legitimately sat down and I just kind of wrote up a little like pitch. And just we sent that out to a couple of different publishers, you know, small indie publishers and stuff like that, just to see, you know, like what if anybody picked it up, that would be awesome. If not, you know, we funded it ourselves and got it out into the world our own way. So, you know, we were already on cloud nine there. So that was just kind of a shot in the dark kind of thing. And yeah, so Scout like almost immediately got back to us and, you know, showed interest. So we went ahead and sent them just a digital file of the entire story and yeah, just kind of took it from there.
Wow. See, again, that superhero thing, you know, many publishers are afraid of it. They don't want to touch it. But your book, I think, is just such that it just, you know, it fits really nicely into what I know Scout's purpose to be, to tell really good stories. And I think that's why your book is there, because I think that Last Stop is one of those great stories that, you know, I got to have me a paper copy of this so I could put it in my collection to keep, because there's every once in a while, this is the kind of a story I want to get back into and reread and re-experience after I've forgotten it for a little while. And I think this is one of those excellent stories that I just think is going to, I think people are going to really pay attention to it. And I don't think this is going to be the end for that universe somehow. I just feel like there's more to come. I could just feel there's more story possibilities there.
Right. I mean, we left a small opening. You know, I can firmly say that Lincoln's story is like very much so done. That is the titular last stop for that character. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think the world building that we did and the kind of foundation we laid, we could potentially be cajoled sometime in the future to maybe revisit that world.
That's so good. It's just a really great story. Very, very human, and, you know, a way to look at the superhero genre. And like I said, you know, they've had Old Man Hawkeye and Old Man Logan and all that stuff. But none of that stuff touched me like this did. And I just think this is just one of those great ways to explore that part of the superhero genre that really I don't think has been done the way that you guys have done it, and really made it as powerful as you guys have done it. It's just terrific. I really love it.
Well, thank you.
So, as far as other things, have you guys got other projects that you're working on, or you've got your own stuff? What else are you working on?
We've got, like, we're working on our next, we fell in love with Webtoon. That's just a fun little, like, thing. We've got ideas and stories, kind of like we felt with Last Stop, where like you were saying, you know, like superheroes, not a lot of people are going to like touch that, and good luck pitching that to like the big two kind of thing. So it's just like, we've got the story and we want to tell it. So we're going to tell it and, you know, do our own thing. And the built-in audience to like Webtoon, not to turn into an ad for them, is pretty fantastic. There's like millions of people that use that app to read comics. And yeah, you can just you be consistent on that site and tell your story week in and week out. And you know, you'll slowly gather a group of people that enjoy reading it. And so we're working on another thing, our next thing that we're planning on releasing for that. We've got an idea that we're kicking around how to best do a potential Kickstarter for that. Me and Hoyt are kind of like a little creative partnership. I mean, we do our own things too, but like we've got like five or six ideas. We're just got like locked and loaded. It's just a matter of, you know, ironing out the details and just getting to work.
Mm. Well, it's great. I love the story. I enjoy this, the storytelling of it too, the different art style and stuff that you were doing, as well as the characters and everything, and the surprises, of course, get me every time. If you can surprise me, that's a good thing, because I read comics for a long time, and to be surprised like I was so many times just in the story was just a real pleasure for me, because I just thought that it's really wonderful stuff. Now, if people want to follow you as far as keeping up with what you're doing, how do they do that?
Pretty much anywhere on social media. I'm not in a lot of places. Twitter, Instagram, things like that. I'm at the Third Walker, all spelled out. Mm-hmm. And I don't really. I'm terrible at social media. I missed the, I guess, age cutoff for that by a couple of years. So I do my best. So if you like pictures of cats and like some baked goods that I enjoy baking on the side, like that's usually what gets posted up there. And then of course, if anything's coming out, it turns into promo mode.
Okay, so you're not on Facebook?
I am, but people can follow me on Facebook, I guess. Oh, okay. That's usually kind of like, I don't have like a public Facebook page.
Okay. Okay, well, then, you know, that's fine as far as that goes. See, Facebook's my thing. That's where I usually go looking for stuff. But can you give us any idea of any of the stuff that you've got coming, or is that – it's still in the development stage and you really can't talk about it?
We've got some stuff in the development stage, but it's not going to hurt to tease some things. Okay. Our next thing that we're kind of like gunning on now for our next like last stop sized thing is it's called Mongrel, and it's about a girl who accidentally adopts a demon dog. So that's going to be a kind of goofy, kind of supernatural meets She-Ra meets Adventure Time kind of thing. We've been cooking up for about a year now.
That's different. I like that. I always enjoy something that I haven't seen before, like I said. And like last stop was that. That sounds, again, something like I haven't seen. So I'm interested in that. I think that's a great thing to go places, you know, where I haven't gone before, to kind of play on Star Trek's thing. It's just great to see that kind of stuff. And I'm gonna have you done other stuff in the past? Maybe we should. Are there other things that people can read?
This is my first big like thing that's
really?
Like published. Yes. Wow. I mean, I've been writing since like 2012, but that's mostly for myself. And just getting up. You know, they say that the first couple of things you write are garbage, and there's some serious truth to that for me anyway. So it's just been a lot of learning, figuring out what exactly I want to do. Comics are kind of like my heart, I guess. That's where I've been gravitating towards, but I've done a lot of short stories and kind of like poked at spec scripts for movie and stuff like that. So
cool.
I've got a lot of ideas, and I'm like, this is now that this is in the can. Got Last Stop finished. Next year, 2020, I plan on really getting out there. I'm gonna start, you know, trying to collab with just about anybody I can. I'm sitting on a mountain of ideas. So
oh, cool. Well, I would love to see them, because in my mind, Last Stop is a home run. I just, you know, you started off right at the top with this one. This is a great one. So, yeah, I'm always going to see how you top yourself, how you're going to be able to tell other stories, because the other one sounds really interesting. So I'm fascinated by that, too. So, you know, Trey, I can't wait to see what else you're going to do. I wish you much success with this. I hope this just takes off, because it's such a great story. It's unusual. And I just want to see this be, you know, a big hit for you and a big hit for Scout. And I can't wait to see what you're going to do next. We'll have to talk again when you got something else coming down
the pike.
Absolutely. I'd enjoy that. So, well, keep it up. And I can't wait for people to see this book now.
Thank you very much.
It's going to be something I think people are going to really enjoy. So, everybody, keep your eye out for Last Stop. It comes from Scout Comics. The first issue will be out, just to tease you, at the end of this month. And look for it in February. I highly recommend you let your store know that you want this, because this is one of those books I'm going to treasure. Or I'm going to keep copies of, so I can read it again in the future. So just keep it up, Trey. You guys did a wonderful job on this.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
people need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's always great to talk to somebody that I have met in the con circuit, and right now I'm talking with Martin Piero from Cosmic Times. How you doing, Martin?
I'm doing great, Wayne. How are you tonight?
Good. I have talked to you many times over the last couple of years at conventions of many different locations and stuff like that. So I finally get to talk with you for the podcast, which is great. So why don't you describe what Cosmic Times is to people first off?
All right, Wayne. Yeah, Cosmic Times it's my comic book publishing company. I initially started it just to be for self-publishing, to publish my own works. Mm-hmm. But once I got into it and I realized how much fun I had publishing and that I really needed to scale the company up if it was going to succeed, so I started bringing other people on. And before, it just kind of snowballed. And next thing I know, I was publishing several people's projects, and then we were in Diamond. We got picked up for national distribution in 2015 by Diamond, and now it just keeps snowballing. I can't even tell you what the next thing is going to hold for us, but it's definitely been a fun ride.
Well, it's pretty cool because, you know, in my perspective, Florida is like a community of comic book people. There are a lot of people who make comics. I read somewhere that yours is considered the biggest indie company in Florida. Is that true?
Well, we were until Scout Comics moved down.
I think
they are, but they're a big monster. You know, they came from up north, so
right.
Homegrown. I'll say that I am. There you go.
Okay. All right, so we'll go with that. We'll cover that. My favorite one that you guys did was the Giant Robot one, and I can never remember the full name of it. It's Giant Robot
Warrior Maintenance Crew.
Yeah, that
part
one.
Part of the joke is in the name. Yeah,
which I enjoyed that book. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I love that too. That was done by Mervyn McCoy and Nate Hill. And we've talked for years about doing the second volume. Mm-hmm. There was a story pitch, but it just never quite materialized. So who knows, one day we might get back to it.
That'd be good. I talked to Mervyn about that on this podcast several years back. And I still say hi to him when I see him at cons because I love that book. I got to see him. When he does more other things too, I've got to be able to get those too. So anyway,
does the C-listers,
yeah, which is a good one, a good book. Now let's talk about the Kickstarter that's going on right now. It's a book called From Blood, and when does the Kickstarter project end?
It ends in 14 days. I think that's the 16th or 17th. I guess it's the 17th. It's 14 days.
Yeah, we're recording this a little ahead of time. It's going to go up on a Sunday. This Sunday, which is, let me look at my calendar just to make sure I know what I'm talking about, the 10th. So yours is going to end on the 18th. So we want to make sure we get everything. Yeah, so we want to make sure we get everything done on that. Why don't you, do you want me to read that you gave me a little flyer that I saw you at Daytona Beach this past weekend.
Yes, sir.
Do you want me to read the thing, or do you want to talk about what the From Blood's about?
Well, I can tell you about it. I've pitched it so many times, I know it like the back of my hand. Okay. It's the story of patient 27. He's been locked away in a mental hospital for over a decade. He's never spoken to anyone, but he's prone to violent rages, and he's fairly invincible and super strong. Mm-hmm. So there's something mysterious about that. A young psychiatrist named Dr. Reese comes in, and she starts working with him. And before long, he starts opening up to her. And we start to discover that there's more to his story than just being this violent creature that's been locked away. And they go on a cross-country quest to try to unlock the secrets of his past. And throughout the story, it unfolds, and we find out who he is, what he's all about, and the higher themes of the story are about, you know, having faith in something, not necessarily religious faith, but just having faith in something. And that's kind of the overall theme of the story. So.
Why is it called From Blood? I'm just curious about that.
What came with that title, it's interesting. Okay. Zach Bassett, who's my creative director, when we first really got going with Cosmic Times and things started to – that first level of starting to snowball, he pitched it to me. He and his he went to SCAD with James Wynot, and James and Zach had this story of this mental patient who had superhuman strength, almost like the Hulk, and he was locked away. And they had already started working on the book, but it really didn't have an ending. It just kind of had a beginning. And he first pitched it to me, and I was like, I don't think I want to do this book. I don't want to do an ultra violent book. But a couple years later, he's like, take a look at it. And I took a look at it. I liked what they had done, and Zach and I sat down and we hashed out the second half of the story. Mm-hmm. So initially, From Blood, I'm not sure what the initial intent was, but we learned that his patient 27's powers come from something that's inside of his blood. So that's where we get the title from. And it's kind of a creepy, cool title. So
yeah, it's pretty good. The way that it's designed, there's almost like little lizardy things, and I don't know quite what that means. But anyway, that's designy kind of stuff, so we don't have to worry about that. But I'm just curious, because I did read that you got involved with the project after it was conceived and stuff. That was one of the things I noticed about the book, and you made it available to me so I could read some of the stuff about it, was that it starts out kind of really violent. You know, stuff I haven't seen in comics before goes on in there.
Yeah.
And I was...
That's how it came to me, so...
Yeah, it's a little... You know, I was set back a little bit by it, but then as it got into the characters more, I guess as you got into it and the stuff came along, it started to become more interesting and stuff to me. I am not... my brother and I have this saying that if you have to measure the color red in quarts and gallons, then it's something that we're not usually interested in. But as the thing went along, of course, I didn't give up on it. I kept going, and I was really interested in the story as it developed. And it has an interesting ending to it.
I don't care for a lot of violence. That's why I initially passed on it. Mm-hmm. And even in that first few pages, when we put the trade out, it's going to have some scenes that we actually cut out. Initially, there was a scene with patient 27 tears a human in half. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's no coming back for that. If the audience sees this character do that, they're never going to forgive him. He can never be the hero that he needs to be by the end of the story. So we made a few changes to a few of those early panels to tone it down. Actually, it used to be a little more violent than it is. So this was the compromise we got. So.
Wow. Okay. Because this was kind of violent. I'm afraid to see what it looked like before.
It was rough. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it's just wild stuff. But, you know, it does bring up something that, you know, I always wonder why, like the Hulk and other people who are super strong, they don't destroy more than they do. They kind of stand around and, you know, flex their muscles and stuff like that. But we don't see much use of that in far of destructive things. You know, like the Hulk right now, he's an immortal Hulk or something like that.
Right.
I've never seen him really do stuff that's really warranted. This is the first time I have to say I really thought, okay, that's what these muscles can really do.
Right. It's true. And it's a scary – the Hulk's really a scary character when you think about it, that there's nothing that can really stop him. And if he wanted to inflict physical harm on other humans, it wouldn't be that difficult for him to just eviscerate somebody. So, and I think that's kind of where James and Zach were with the beginning of this story. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of what if the Hulk were locked away? And, you know, he's in this situation, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's something we haven't seen before, which, you know, I like comics that take me places I haven't been before. And that's what this story does. I begin to see, you know, a very different look at it. You know, the Hulk, I don't want to compare him too much to the Hulk all the time, but I think he's got the strength to do things, and he actually does it. And yet, it isn't very long before the human aspects of him start to come out, which I really liked. And I like the fact that when he thinks, it's reverse text. You know, the block is black and the text is white. It's reversed from everybody else and how they think. So that gives an idea that the way he thinks is even different from yes. other people. So I like that about that. Was that in the initial book? Was that the way that the initial text was done, or was that something that came in later?
No, that was initially the way it was done. Originally, the whole book was going to be black and white because at the time, even I was like, this will be too much red if we colored this. But in the current market now, black and white just doesn't sell. So that's kind of where this Kickstarter comes from. We're funding the coloring and the printing of the book. That's pretty much all we're asking for. Mm-hmm. I'm currently paying the colorist out of pocket. I'm hoping to recoup some of that from the Kickstarter and then, of course, cover the printing costs. We're doing a foil cover, which is something we've never done on a trade before. So it's a costly process to print these trade paperbacks. So that's why we decided to go to Kickstarter with it and also try to find a new audience. We've seen a lot of guys, you know, get a loyal audience from just going on the Kickstarter. So this is kind of our grand experiment to see if maybe going with crowdfunding or at least some kind of crowdsourcing isn't the path to go going forward.
Well, you know, I tell this to people occasionally when we talk about Kickstarter, is that somebody made a point one time, and I don't know if it's valid or not, but somebody said Marvel was the biggest publisher of comics, and then if you put them all together, Kickstarter would be number two.
Because so many comics come out of Kickstarter, yeah.
And I'm always fascinated by that because I'm a DC guy myself, and so I when I heard that, it stunned me. But I can see it because, you know, as time goes along and I interview people who do Kickstarters and stuff, I feel kind of like I need to support them and keep them going, particularly if I really enjoy what they're doing. I keep seeing more and more Kickstarter things going along. And I think so much about why we didn't have Kickstarter sooner. You know, all these stories that people had that didn't get done for years. All of a sudden now we're starting to see all these stories that people had, but you're never going to get DC or Marvel or even Image to print.
Right.
And now we get to see them because of Kickstarter. And so
you get more passion projects out of Kickstarter than you say out of the big two.
Yeah. It's not, you know, Kickstarter stuff is not monthly comics usually, you know, like DC and Marvel are.
No.
This is much more of a story. People are telling completed stories, which I really like.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do too. You know, I want to try to give people a complete beginning, middle, and end for their bucks when they support us on Kickstarter. I'm not against. I mean, people who do the single issues on Kickstarter and build up to something, that's cool too. That they manage to, you know, find an audience and they keep it going over a longer period of time. I'm not sure if we can do that or not. That's kind of why I'm sticking to just going to give you a complete story as best I can.
Mm-hmm. So if this goes well, I mean, are we going to see more Cosmic Time stuff out on Kickstarter?
Oh, most definitely. This is kind of – I'm trying to just like I said, try to feel it out, see if this is a way to – this is actually the third one we've done, but this is the first one we've really focused on as a possible future business model for Cosmic Times for at least some of the books we publish. Because like I say, yes, we would love to get it funded and to cover the printing cost. But we've also – it's a way to find a new audience, and that's what we're hoping to do. We're seeing people backing the book who I don't know who they are. They're not from our normal customer base, and I think that's really cool that we're finding new clientele. Just like when you go to a Comic-Con, you find new customers there. Mm-hmm. This, to me, is just another avenue like a Comic-Con is.
Yeah, and it's got a worldwide perspective to it, which that's is true. A very good thing. You know, it'll get people, you know, they might go to their comic shop and say, hey, do you get these Cosmic Time stuff? And if they don't, maybe they can get them to order it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing too. That's one of the reasons I find Kickstarter attractive. When we were in Diamond, my Diamond rep used to always tell me that 60% of our orders were coming from the state of Florida, meaning we had a great reach in Florida where I live, but the rest of the country, you know, only 40% of our orders were coming from the other 49 states. Mm-hmm. So this is a way also to try to reach a more global, at least a more national audience, and try to find people that. If I don't go to C2E2 or Emerald City every year, maybe I can find customers over on the other coast of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing. I mean, you want to be able to reach out and expand your growth, you know, expand the audience. Because, you know, the stories you tell are really good. Like I said, the Giant Robot one just won me over. I was just really fantastic Enjoy. There was another one, I think, was it called Deliverance that you did recently?
Decisions,
that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I really was taken by that, too, because that was about 180 degrees different from Blood.
It is. That's a passion project of mine, the Decisions books. Whenever I want to make a point or try to tell something maybe a little bit deeper than a fun action-oriented comic, I put those stories in those Decisions books, so... Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, getting back to From Blood, I'm interested in Dr. Reese. You know, we talked about the fact that the main character has Hulk references or kind of resembles on some levels, but other characters as well. But the Dr. Reese is a very different character. I don't think I've read any character in all the years I've read comics that resemble her and her history, which we get early on in the book.
Yeah, that was one thing I would have liked to have spent a little more time on, her history. But the point of that opening scene is how she ends up handling patient 27. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a moment of violence that happens with the dog in her flashback, and it's met with violence. Mm-hmm. So when she has the moment with patient 27, instead of meeting it with more violence, she realizes the way is to not be violent, to come at the different, you know, put the softer hands on. And that's kind of her character arc. Like I said, I wish we could have done a little more with her, but you know, that 2-page spread where that truck flips over took up some real estate in the comic. So
one of the things I enjoyed about the description of the book is that it's like an action adventure kind mm-hmm. of book with lots and lots of action. I'd say there's people getting flung around. You know, you talk about the truck getting going to. There's machine guns, arms coming off.
Yeah, well, that's a bit much, the arms. But but it was when I sat down with Zach to flesh out the finale in the second, pretty much the last two-thirds of the story. I'm a big fan of Richard Donner and his films like Lethal Weapon, Maverick, and Superman. So when Zach and I sat down, I said, I want to do something that kind of has that kinetic vibe that a Lethal Weapon does. That's why we put the main character in a semi-truck for a chase down the street, very much like you would see in a Lethal Weapon film, and the finale on an unfinished expressway. So that was kind of in mind when we were working on, you know, what the action beats of the story would be, that they would be kind of that speed that a Richard Donner film moves at.
Well, I have to say that some of the comics that come out today have so many word balloons on them. I turn the page and I look and there's like 40 word balloons on a page. And I'm like, gah, can I actually read all that stuff? See, your book is much more oriented towards movement. There's some discussion going on and some facts being given out and stuff like that. But it's not nearly the level that I see a lot of other books doing these days, which appealed to me, I have to say. Sometimes I look at these books and I just go, am I actually going to have time to sit and read all this stuff? Right. And I understand writers feel the need to put dialogue in because that shows that they're writing. But on the other hand, it's a visual medium. And so when I read this book, I kind of thought I'd like more books to be like this, showing us stuff. You know, the old TV axiom, you don't tell us, you show us.
And right. That's what
this book does that really well, I thought.
Well, that's the thing with comics, too. It's a visual medium. It's not a book. It's not a novel or a prose novel. I find that I'm the same way. If there's too many word balloons, I don't necessarily lose interest, but I keep the story moving because it slows it down. You have to – like the beauty of it is Zach is a SCAD graduate and he's the artist of the book and a co-writer. So he kept that in mind. It's keep the story moving. You can stop here for 2 or 3 pages with some dialogue, but then you got to keep the story moving. You got to keep the pages turning or it's not an enjoyable experience for the reader. And they don't have that sense of the urgency that – The story, there's a lot of urgency to the story. There's a lot of movement to the story. And if we stopped and filled it with so many word balloons, you wouldn't physically have that urgency to keep turning the pages. So that was definitely thought out when we were working on the book.
And the book kind of takes place within a few days.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's not like some books are like, all of a sudden you get a little thing that says months later, and I'm going, oh, what happened in those months? You know, why are we jumping months ahead? This takes place in, I would say, 5 or 6 days?
Pretty much. He gets time. Yeah, I think it's 3 or 4 tops. Okay. The a lot of what for the filling in the story, we do a lot of that through flashbacks. Like we'll throw a flashback in between this sequence here or this sequence there to keep the reader. Give the reader what they need to know about the characters and the situations, but then I like to keep it moving. I mean, a lot of people give George Lucas a hard time for, you know, the prequels, but his filmmaking style is always, let's keep it going. Keep it. How much faster can we keep this thing moving at? That was kind of our philosophy. We wanted it to seem action. We wanted it to seem like there's a speed to it. So yeah, we just wanted to keep it moving, and we wanted the reader to feel like they were on the journey with the characters.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's one other thing I wanted to point out about Patient 27. When the time comes to describe himself, he picks an interesting word. They're putting things up on a refrigerator, you know, these magnetic letters up there. And he picks the word monster.
Right.
Which I found really interesting because I was just getting to the place where I was feeling the human parts of him. And to see him pick that word was kind of a surprise to me at that point.
Yeah, that's what he feels he is. And when he's later captured and the character of Watts is talking to him, he keeps referring to him as a monster. He wants him to be the monster so he can use him as a weapon, when really – but Dr. Reese is pulling out his humanity. So that goes to Zach. That was all Zach's idea for that. So
that was very surprising to me. It really was. Now, the other doctor that is involved that comes in what's the name of the other doctor? The
friend asked?
Yeah.
Marcus, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, Marcus gets involved, and that relationship's kind of good because we see some conflict between the two doctors, which is a fun thing to see at that point because, you know, the discussion between Dr. Reese and he comes to be known as Tim, that has kind of come to a resolution, and suddenly this other person comes in. And we get to find out more about the whole situation from this other doctor's perspective.
Right. He brings the baggage in for the story. The impetus for why Tim is the way he is, or Patient 27 is the way he is, that comes from Dr. Marcus. So that's kind of a nice, you know, it adds a layer to the story, I felt.
Yeah, it's a surprise to me because I didn't expect that. I kind of figured it would be the two of them. And to introduce this new character kind of gave it a more... again, this human feel that we get to find out what's happening. We get to find out more about who Patient 27 and Timothy is with all this good stuff. And it's interesting to see that there's still animus between even the two of them, the new doctor and that and Patient 27. There's still a lot of things going on with that. And I really like the discussion. The action doesn't slow down, but we get a lot of the history told in really, you know, interesting and fast formatting, which I really liked.
Yeah, I think we really set forward to try to, especially after all the violence in the beginning, to make the characters as real and three-dimensional as we could. So having the relationship with Marcus and Dr. Reese and Tim all kind of interwoven there really enabled us a chance to have conversations and make the characters seem, at least in my opinion, you know, as the best we could, to seem like real people that were in this bizarre situation.
And there's helicopters and there's more trucks coming along.
Yeah, it's a big crescendo at the end.
Yeah, it's really great. And I got a kick, and I don't know if this is on purpose or not, but the SWAT team people look like they were wearing Star Wars outfits to me.
Yeah, it was. We played a little fast and loose with some of that stuff. So
I don't know why people don't do that more in real life, because, you know, that kind of armor and stuff like that's going to protect you more than, say, you know, the average SWAT team stuff. I always look at and think, gosh, that's not going to protect them. But
I think they knew they're up against a monster. So
yeah, maybe they put on their monster gear.
Exactly.
Now, I really enjoyed the book, and I got to the end, and I don't want to in any way spoil what happens at the end. But there's a really big surprise at the end that I really liked.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
A huge kick. Now, there's one part I did want to mention, and it touches in the beginning. There's when Dr. Reese talks to Tim about this business and talk about how God – they bring up God in the subject and the business, and Tim says there's no God for someone like me. And then we get later on in the book, and suddenly two people say the Lord's Prayer.
That's true. Yes. Well, it's we didn't want to be heavy-handed with any kind of religious things, mm-hmm. but he feels abandoned by everybody, including God at that point. Mm-hmm. And the like I said, the theme of the book is having faith in something, in yourself and somebody else, in a higher power, whatever. And she kind of, you know, she gives him her cross and she tries to give him something to believe in. Mm-hmm. And like ultimately, like you say, but toward later in the story, I don't want to spoil too much. Mm-hmm. It all kind of comes full circle. And mm-hmm. obviously Dr. Reese is a person of deep faith. And I don't want to spoil too much about how the mm-hmm. book ends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. But there's the last two panels have wonderful. One person says something and the response is really great. It's talking about the how we got to where we are, basically, and I really like that. But you know, it leads me to wonder: is this the you said it's a complete story? Is there any chance that we might visit the From Blood universe again?
That's funny you were talking about that. Zach and I, we've been talking back and forth about, you know, being how well the Kickstarter does and if people are interested. We have a couple other stories that we're bouncing around for future projects. And a couple of them, like I was talking to Zach, I said, we could tie these into Tim's story as well mm-hmm. if you want to, because there's the secret organization that with the big lion logo. And who knows? We'll see how well the Kickstarter goes and see if we bring some other characters into the same universe as what's happening in that book. Because there's definitely room for more at the end.
Because it could be From More Blood
or something.
Even more blood, yeah. See, titles like that always get me. I always get a huge kick out of when people do that. Because I was talking with somebody recently about the final countdown or something like that. And then we go to another movie and it's another final countdown. Right. Final Countdown 2 or something like that. How can it be Final Countdown 2?
Well, don't forget, it was Die Hard and then it was Die Hard 2, Die Harder.
Yeah, I always get kicks out of that. That kind of stuff. Now, see, you bring up a subject here that I think is kind of interesting. Could this be turned into, say, a movie? You're talking about movies and stuff. Could there be a From Blood movie possibility?
I'm not against. I've always said if somebody shows up with a movie check, I am always going to say yes. But it's never been our intent. That's one thing I tried to avoid with Cosmic Times is I want to make good comics. My goal is to make. I love the medium of comics, and I don't want to get past that too far thinking and start making comics that I could pitch as movies, because I don't know. It just I think it's a unique medium, and if I design it for just making movie pitches, then I think I'm selling the medium a little short. So my philosophy is I would love it if somebody wanted to come give us big fat movie check money, but if not, at least I feel good that we made the best comic book we could. So.
On the other hand, I look at it, a comic is always the way you could portray a script on a screen. You know, you're doing direction when you lay out the way
it's like storyboards, yeah.
Yeah, because and you know, sometimes there's parts of it that'll work and parts of it that won't. But on the other hand, you're giving people an idea what they could see on the screen, which is why I always say a comic is just a perfect example. I was talking with somebody recently who said that they were told they had to have a comic before people would consider making a movie out of their script. So they went back and made a comic. And now I said, well, now they're going to go back and take the comic back, see what happens next. But it was interesting. I see more and more people saying that comics are an ideal way of preparing scripts for a big or small screen.
Well, I'll tell you, the first book I ever published under the banner of Cosmic Times was a book called Arthur, the Legend Continues, about King Arthur in a post-apocalyptic England. That originally, because my career has gone plenty of places in the entertainment business, and that originally was supposed to be a television pitch. And I liked the story so much, I reformatted it and turned it into a comic. So yeah, I think the two live in a very, very similar world. Visual, they're both visual mediums, you know, comics and movies or television shows. And mm-hmm. nowadays with so many apps and so many different places, Disney, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Apple, all making original content. Mm-hmm. They're looking to comics for inspiration, for sure.
And never mind the cable companies that are all making. I mean, I've got like 1,000 channels on my cable, and every one of them is looking for new content. I remember when sci-fi first came on. The thing they did was they broadcast old Battlestar Galactica's and old Buck Rogers shows.
Right.
Then all of a sudden they made a decision to go to new content.
Right.
And bang, they just start, you know, all my friends who are into sci-fi like I am. We would just turn on sci-fi all the time because we wanted to see the new stuff they were doing.
Sure.
It's not so much anymore, but that's the way it has been. But
where New Battlestar came from, sci-fi, didn't it? That's where they used to air it. Yeah.
Yes, that's where it was. Now they're talking about New Battlestar.
New Battlestar.
Yeah. So, but this book would make a great I could see this on Netflix easy.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
It's just it's got that feel of, you know, if you're doing it in a story that moves at a good clip, which makes it easier to watch on the television. Oh my gosh, I cannot. We talk about comics. Sometimes I watch TV shows and there's this long period of debate going on between these characters, and I'm going like, can somebody do something, please?
Thank you. I agree. Some of these shows that go on for years, you're like, I think they could have trimmed some of this. You know, they could make these seasons a little shorter or something. Yeah.
There was one always stands out to me, and if he has his fans, J. Michael Straczynski. He had and the show that he had these two huge galactic forces facing off against each other, and in between them goes this little bitty ship with these two people, and they debate with the two galactic forces for 20 minutes about that. And I remember thinking, why hasn't somebody shot them by now? You know, there's these two people with two great big huge forces. They don't shoot them. I think it was Babylon 5 was it was. And I just remember sitting there thinking, oh, come on. So it just depends, I guess, on that. See, I'm an action-oriented guy. I much prefer stories like the one that you're making that has things moving instead of debating. So I like that a lot. So I think From Blood, I'm very optimistic that this is going to make it through the Kickstarter, and this might be open up a whole new revenue stream for you guys, let's hope.
I hope so. You know, the market keeps – I mean, you know about this more than anybody, I'm sure. The market's constantly changing.
Yeah.
The trends go up, trends go down, and they're happening so much faster than they used to. So it's if we can find an audience for this book, I would love that. Hopefully the word gets out and people will support the Kickstarter, and in a couple months we'll have a nice shiny graphic novel. That's the hope, you know.
That'd be great. And you can sell it when you go to your cons and stuff.
Definitely.
Speaking of which, right now you're probably consumed with the Kickstarter. Do you have any more cons coming up the rest of this year?
Oh, you're catching me between cons. We were just at the Daytona Beach Comic Con last weekend.
Right.
This coming weekend, I'm going to be in Fort Lauderdale for the Gamer Comic Expo.
Okay.
It's 3 days at the Broward County Convention Center right there by the port.
Oh.
So that's...
So when this posts, then you'll be at that con on Sunday morning. Okay, that'll be fun. Is that the end of the year for you, or...?
You know, I think we got one more left. I think we're doing something on the other coast in Fort Myers. Southwest Florida Con. I think that's in this year still, too. I have to look that up. But we also do all sorts of other things. We're doing two presentations for the Girl Scouts. We do comic book presentation for the Scouts, trying to spread the gospel of comics. We have one in Miami and one in West Palm all before the year ends. So
wow. Well, I hate to ask what 2020 has in store for you. Are you going to be as busy next year as you have been this year?
Well, it all kind of swings on this Kickstarter. We'll see what happens with the Kickstarter. If the Kickstarter does well, then we're definitely going to be looking at reshuffling our business model. I know just at Daytona, I was talking to Roland Mann from Silverline and a few other folks about getting back to Charlotte for Heroes Con. It's one of my favorite conventions, and I haven't been in about 2 or 3 years, so I want to get back there. So.
I can understand that. Now, as far as like Cosmic Times goes, and this, again, is going to keep you guys busy, are there other projects that you can talk about that are coming? Or is this keeping you busy?
This is keeping me busy. We have a slate of things we're working on right now. We have another decisions book that I'm just finishing the scripting on. Zach is currently working on a Western comic that we may see that sooner rather than later. The Void of Heroes series that we did with the company out of Finland, there's a second volume of that coming. So we have things on our plate. It's just what the business model is going to look like is still what we're figuring out.
Well, you've got to change with the times and exactly. The cosmic times. You know, things are going to change as we've said. It's going to be very different. I mean, 5 years ago, you know, prior to Kickstarter and stuff, did we ever dream this kind of stuff would happen? Or cons? You'd have like every weekend 4 or 5 cons across the country.
You almost have 2 or 3 in the state of Florida, it seems. There's always something going on here.
I'm always amazed by that. So yeah. If people want to keep up with Cosmic Times, how do they do that? Website?
We're on all the social media channels, but if you just go to our website, cosmictimes.net, you'll find all the links that go to all of our social media. I try to keep the site pretty much up to date. So just cosmictimes.net. We couldn't get .com. Somebody has it, and they won't give it up. So we're .net. Yeah.
I said, "What the Wayne's Comics?" I had to go Wayne's Comics podcast because somebody had Wayne's Comics as a store in Texas.
Oh,
with Wayne's Comics, and so I had to go Wayne's
Comics. At least they're using it. Whoever owns CosmicTimes.com isn't even using it.
Oh, God. Well, maybe you have to entice them in some way. Maybe give them a.
Yeah, I think it's money. I think they want money, is what.
Oh, well, that might be tough.
Right.
That much, because people, but there are a lot of people who land on web. Domain names, and what they do is they sit there waiting for somebody to pay them to give them up.
I think that's the story with this one. So
that's too bad, because
it's fine. We've been cosmictimes.net for 11 years, so that's kind of know to find us. So
wow, okay, well, you know, Martin, as always, you're doing great stuff, and I'm looking forward to this. I'm sure this is going to be a success, and then we'll see what you do from there. I'm going to be really anxious to see how Cosmic Times, you know, adapts and moves into the future, because.
It'll be interesting.
But, yeah, it'll be great. So, well, hopefully we get to talk with you again sometime soon again, Martin. And
certainly.
Something fun is coming up. Let me know, and we'll talk again.
Well, thanks for having me on. And I'm sure before all said and done, I'll see you at a convention, and we'll talk then.
We will, for sure. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this episode. And in coming weeks, I'll have some great interviews, so be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.